Hello and happy new year, everyone. I'm Nick Tricarci, and we are so happy to welcome you back to the podcast. We've got some really big things planned for 2025. And I'm also happy to welcome back Danny Zamora and Valerie Boisseau. So you guys are dice and segment experts.
It's all about disaggregation at this point, Nick.
Exactly. Well, happy new year. You know, with the new year comes one thing, New Year's resolutions. Did you guys set any?
You want to start with yours, Valerie?
Yes, I think for 2025, you know, I could see myself traveling more, exercising more. That would be good.
Sounds nice.
I'm probably sticking to the classics at this point. Hit the gym, eat healthier, spend less time scrolling on my phone. I think realistically, come February, I'm probably considering a brisk walk to the coffee machine or workout.
There you go. Get your steps in that way.
I have to.
So I think I'm going to try to order out less and cook more. And I'm thinking that'll hopefully save me some money and eat healthier.
There we go.
So we'll see how successful we all are.
I like that.
But the new year also brings one more thing with it, and that's new segment disclosures. So I thought we could have some fun by talking about how companies are preparing for these new disclosure requirements by drawing some parallels to some of the more popular New Year's resolutions. But first, I wanted to let our audience in on a little side story. As we were planning for this podcast before the break, tossing around ideas, Valerie, you sent me an email with a list of four New Year's resolutions that we could use for this episode. I'm going to read them. One was get in shape. Two was be a better listener and specifically listen to your wife more. Three was remodel your home. And four was go on a diet and cut out the chocolate. And I'm like, yeah, this sounds like a good start. I looked at the title of that list and it said Nick's New Year's resolution. So my first question is, what are you trying to say about me?
And this is all true, by the way, but it was not intentional. It was just for the joke. If you pick just one, and I have not talked to your wife. So
okay, I was going to say, did she put you up to that? Or? All right, well, we're not going to go with quite all four of those, but we will work in some of the more common ones, Danny, that you talked about. I want to start with, you know, a very common one, which is just improving your overall health and wellness, right? And so talk to us about this in the context of a segment disclosure. What would the equivalent of this be for a company that has to implement this ASU?
If I think about improving health and wellness, that typically starts with some sort of detox, right?
Yep.
Like you're cleansing yourself out, flushing out the toxins, starting fresh. To me, this means companies should first go back to the foundational steps of topic 280, period. The critical thing here, I think, is to make sure that your reportable segments and your CODM have been appropriately identified. And I think the new ASU, it doesn't change the current guidance in these areas, but I think we do expect that the SEC is going to be focused on this heavily, meaning they're not going to look at this as a fine-tuning project. They're going to perform a top-down review of the segment footnote itself.
All right, so let me pause right there, because I just want to make sure I'm following what you're saying. Because like you said, the new ASU doesn't change anything with respect to how one identifies operating segments and reportable segments, right? But I think what you're saying is, look, this is going to be a focus of the SEC. They're going to be looking at a lot more segment disclosures and footnotes. And when they do, this is going to maybe give them another opportunity to start asking those types of questions about the historical conclusions. Is that what you're saying?
So I think it's really safe to say that they're not just focused on the new elements, but they're also focused on ensuring that these foundational aspects of segment reporting, identifying your reportable segments, they're all rock solid.
It almost seems like this ASU gives them a new opportunity to look into some of that, meaning one of the big new disclosures is significant segment expenses. We're going to talk about here in a second. I imagine the SEC is going to ask for some support on how companies went about identifying that, which could include the CODM package, right? And so if they're looking at that, now it gives them an avenue to look at how one has identified their segments, right? Is that a fair linkage?
I think that's absolutely a fair linkage. The new disclosures around significant segment expenses, to me, I view that like opening up a new window. It's how the business is being managed. So for the SEC, I view that as an opportunity to dig a lot deeper.
Do you think there's any companies out there that might be at a higher risk of the SEC trying to maybe second guess their reportable segments?
Not to put anyone on the spot or call anyone out in specific, but I do think about the single segment entities. They do now have skin in the game. Some might say they even have more at stake than multiple segment entities. Believe it or not, this population makes up about 1/3 of SEC registrants.
Really? Wow.
So just think about that for a second. That's a pretty significant population of registrants. So my tip for the new year would be, if you are reporting as a single segment, double click on that. Make sure that you got it right. It's been a frequent area of SEC comments, and with the new ASU in play, it's bound to get a lot more attention.
And so maybe that's a good segue to Valerie. Our second New Year's resolution, I think you even mentioned this as being one of your own, but a lot of people have it, is going to the gym more, right? So yeah. What's the segment reporting equivalent of working out?
Well, I think, you know, if you think working out is not just about lifting heavier weights, it's about having the right strategy, consistency, focusing on building strength, staying balanced. So you apply this to the new ASU, obviously designed to add meaningful details that investors can rely on. But you need to, again, like strike the right balance between what the requirements are and what just makes sense in the context of the company.
So you're saying companies are going to have to bulk up their segment footnote?
That's what we expect. We're going to see, you know, everybody's very focused on segment expenses, obviously, and that those single reportable segment entities will have for the first time a segment reporting note.
Yeah, so let's dig into each of those, because I think those are the big ticket new items, right, as a result of this ASU. And let's start with significant expenses. Can you just level set for the listeners as to what is new as a result of this ASU?
Sure. So companies now have to disclose their significant segment expenses. So that is any expense information that is provided to the CODM or that is easily computable from the information provided to the CODM. So that's what we're looking for.
Okay. Yeah. So historically, companies have had to disclose sales by segment and then some measure of profit or loss by segment. This is now going to require disclosure of some of that stuff in between, right?
Exactly. So yeah. We're trying to provide a better reconciliation between, you know, your revenue, so your top line, down to that profit measure by segment.
Yep.
And what's in between. So if you can disaggregate segment expenses based on what the CODM is provided with, that's what you do. And for any other items that are not presented to the CODM, then you group them as other items, but still by reportable segments.
Okay. And obviously for this podcast, we're focused on the 2024 year end, particularly for calendar years, because we're in January. But just like going to the gym is an ongoing commitment, this disclosure is going to be required in interim periods going forward too, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you don't just go to the gym, you know, every once in a while. If you want to see the difference, you've got to do that repeatedly. So that's exactly the idea here. Segment reporting, not just the new disclosures, by the way, but everything under topic 280 now becomes an interim requirement. Yes, starting 2025. So like you just mentioned, you know, we first adopt this for calendar year company in there in 24 10K and then going forward for the Qs.
Okay. So I know the ASU doesn't define the term significant, but to me, that's a pretty critical component of this because companies are only disclosing significant segment expenses. So I guess, do we have a view on what the word significant means in this context?
Yeah, big judgment here, Nick. You know, the hint that was given to everyone through the basis of conclusion of the ASU is that we have to presume that if information is provided to the CODM, it is significant. And so it's sort of, you've got to work backwards from that sort of presumption.
Okay.
And if you want to claim that some information is provided to the CODM yet not significant, you know, you've got to explain why. So I think what we've seen in practice is companies doing extensive work in 2024, trying to sort of rethink or perhaps clean up even the information provided to the CODM, really critically assess, like, why is this information provided? Is it critical? Does the CODM use the information? If they don't use it, then why is it provided? So having really, really like that meaningful insight into the bulk of information provided to the CODM.
Yeah, that seems like it could get pretty judgmental, like you said.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, if our listeners who have listened to this podcast for a while know that I love a good rebuttable presumption. So I guess this is a new one that's going to be introduced to GAAP. All right. So the other key component of the disclosure is that it's regularly provided, emphasis on provided, right? As opposed to reviewed. But I guess, do we have any thoughts as to what we think that means?
Yeah, I think there's probably a misconception that, you know, because sometimes we talk about the reporting package. And there is a misconception there that you can't just look blindly at what is the reporting package. So it's really the extensive information that is provided to the CODM. Like you said, it's not just what's reviewed. That's the starting point. But you also have to sort of define the right balance between what's potentially accessible and what's being provided. So, you know, start broadly and then try to refine would be the advice here. But don't start just with, you know, that one pager that goes to the CODM on a quarterly basis. That may be just too small.
So to Valerie's point, in that case, you got to consider other sources of financial information. I think what many companies have been talking about is looking at other information like press releases, earnings releases, even MD&A at times.
Board materials,
frequent CODM meetings, right? All of that to make sure that information is consistently being applied.
Yep.
If there's something that sticks out, you got to question that.
This seems like a big completeness exercise, right? First, you got to get the complete population of information that's provided to the CODM. And that's really your starting point. And that's your point, Valerie. Maybe you can whittle some of that down if it's not significant. But again, that's going to require a lot of judgment. Absolutely. Is that a fair summation?
Absolutely. Okay. And I think, you know, important to keep in mind that this would be the number one question the SEC would ask. Like, what is the information provided to the CODM? If you ever get that love letter from the SEC, that's...
Is that what we're calling them now? Yeah. I like that rebrand.
That's what you have to explain, really.
All right. So we are, what, a month away from starting to see this information come out for calendar year. So hopefully everybody is pretty far along, if not putting the final bows on their own, you know, segment disclosures. But we've gotten a ton of questions, and I know you guys have gotten a ton of questions from people over the last 6 to 12 months in preparation for this. And for those that are listening that maybe have procrastinated like I like to do, let's give a little crash course on some of the frequently asked questions and see if we can help some folks out. So Valerie, I'm going to go a little bit of a rapid fire here and you, you know, just tell me what you think. So let's say the CODM, in addition to receiving a monthly or quarterly or annual package, they also have access to a dashboard, or maybe it's a SharePoint site or some other type of electronic reporting that contains a lot of other detailed information. Does that mean that that is now regularly provided and would potentially result in more disclosure?
Well, those cases are tricky, let's be honest, because the starting point is a little bit fuzzy. So that's where more judgment has to be exercised. But again, you know, I would put the words matter. So like you said, you know, provided, reviewed, that's different.
Yep.
Accessible, reviewed, provided, that's different.
Okay.
It's always been the case that the CODM somehow could ask the accountant, you know, walk the corridor and ask for a printout of the trial balance. I mean, the information has always been available, yet does not mean that everything falls through the segment reporting notes. So it's really, you know, some kind of exercise to really somewhat triangulate the information that's being provided, used, out of those dashboards, and you know, how many clicks does it take to get to the information? But again, you know,
how many licks does it take to get to the center of the lollipop?
Exactly,
I think it was three, right?
Maybe four, actually.
So I guess the word of advice is, if you are one of these companies and your CODM has access in this type of way, we would expect this to be part of the documentation in your controls, in your memo that goes along with adopting this new ASU, right?
Absolutely.
I would argue that this is probably the most judgmental area of trying to figure this out. Just because you have access to something doesn't necessarily mean it's regularly provided. And one could argue that the CODM has access to basically anything they need.
Right. To Valerie's point, they could always ask for it, right? All right. So let's go through a couple more specific examples. Let's say the CODM package includes expense information that's further disaggregated in some kind of manner. So let's just say, for example, there's selling costs by segment, but then within their selling costs by either product line or geography or end market. would we expect that type of detailed information to end up in the footnote, or would it just be selling costs by segment?
Yeah, again, judgment required. I would say that the, you know, the starting point is this is information provided to the CODM, so definitely part of the assessment. I would say in order to get to the aggregated number, that selling expense you just mentioned, the company would need to explain that the sub details are not significant. So like, how do you argue that? Why is the information provided to the CODM in the first place? I would also say that, you know, when we've seen situations where information is provided to the CODM within the segment by product or by geography, that also puts a little bit of pressure on the segmentation conclusion.
Absolutely.
So, you know, yeah. Are we still sure that the segment is what we say it is, especially if we're talking like a one segment company?
And that brings us back to what we were talking about earlier, exactly. Danny, right?
I think the FASB makes it very easy for companies to identify significant segment expenses. I mean, go back to the spirit of all of this. What's the objective?
Yeah.
Disaggregate your expenses.
Okay. What about corporate expenses? Let's say the CODM is provided with corporate expense detail. Is that something that would get wrapped into this new disclosure?
Certainly, if they are allocated by segments.
Okay.
And the FASB has actually clarified that, you know, the fact that an expense is allocated just based on allocation keys, or like there is no natural, maybe direct allocation possible, that doesn't take away the requirement. If it's somehow provided to the CODM by segment, yeah, that's definitely in.
And that's maybe a good clarification. We said it has to be significant. It has to be regularly provided. And the third thing actually is it has to be included in that measure of segment profit or loss, right?
Yes.
All right. And then I've heard this from some people, which is we don't share any expense information with the CODM. All we provide is sales by segment and the profit measure. So let's just say EBITDA. What would you say to those companies?
Yeah. So certainly a possibility that there is no segment expense. I think that's even acknowledged in the ASU itself. So that was considered. But I would not say if a company, for example, if a CODM is provided with some measure of profitability, like a gross margin or in the EBITDA or anything, you know, similar to that, you can still recompute an expense number. So I'm not sure you actually get away from having an expense disclosure altogether. The situation that was envisioned in the ASU was more of a case where the CODM maybe manages based on forecast information. So like there's really no actual expense information going to the CODM for decision-making.
All right, let me get you off the hot seat with one last question here. You guys have seen a lot of draft disclosures, I assume. I know you've been meeting with companies all over the place. Have we started to see any trends emerge or common expense lines that those folks are, you know, identifying as significant?
Yeah, we're definitely starting to see mock-up disclosures, and we've run a couple of surveys to try to help our clients to get some insights as to what their peers are doing. You know, this is the million-dollar question. I think everybody would want to know what the peers are going to present.
Yeah.
It does depend by industry, but certainly, you know, like we expect companies that have some form of manufacturing or sales goods to have at least a measure for their cost of revenue, their cost of goods sold. That seems like a natural one that you would expect the CODM be paying attention to some level of gross margin.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a good candidate. But, you know, the question then, are there sub disaggregation of that, like cost of materials or like, so yeah, how far down are companies going to go? Some are perhaps going to break down the cost of revenue. Are we going to see SG&A or selling expenses by segment? Yeah, all of that is on the table, definitely.
All right. Well, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens here in a few months. So with that, I guess anything else you want to say to our listeners about significant expenses before we move on to the other new item, which is single segment entities?
Yeah, maybe just one more piece that the SEC actually clarified for us, but we still get the question quite a bit. It's those non-GAAP expenses. So what if the CODM is provided with measures of expenses that are not on a GAAP basis? So think about a cost of goods sold, excluding share-based payments.
Okay. Right?
That's a very common one. The SEC said, yeah, that's fine. Like if that's what's provided to the CODM, that makes its way in. So there's really, and sometimes there's a little confusion around, we don't treat the same way, a non-GAAP expense and a non-GAAP profitability measure.
Okay.
So non-GAAP expense, they go in, no question asked if that's what's provided to the CODM. Non-GAAP profitability measure, that's where you pause and you think twice if they are going
to
go in.
One thing to emphasize too, though, is the SEC didn't mention if you are going down the non-GAAP expense route, it should be clearly labeled.
Yep.
It should be described in the notes to the financials just to avoid any sort of confusion.
Yeah, and you don't want it to be misleading, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right, so that's a good add there. All right, so let's move to single reportable segment entities. This new ASU is also resulting in a lot of new disclosures for those companies. Can you just spend a minute talking through what's changing?
So those companies, you know, it was never clear if they were in scope of Topic 280. So no one really paid attention to the requirements. So now it's been clarified. If you're a single reportable segment entity, you have to comply with Topic 280. So what does that mean? We think about single reportable segment entities in two ways. So there's two categories of them. You can be a single reportable segment because you have several operating segments, but they are aggregated into just one reportable segment.
Yeah.
So if that's your fact pattern, I would say it operates pretty much like everything we've said before. You know, you have multiple operating segments, so you will choose the measure of profitability that is provided to the CODM, and then you do the walk from revenue down to that measure for your reportable segment. So it works sort of the same. The other category of single reportable segment entities are those ones that are managed on a consolidated basis, which usually means that there's just one operating segment. So the segment is the company.
Yep.
And in that case, the SEC said, well, we don't see how the CODM would not pay attention to net income. So you can argue with that. You know, it's definitely been an area of contentious debate. And even at
that's where you're going. Yeah, go ahead.
At the ICP conference, one of the panelists was actually mentioning that they think their CODM doesn't pay attention to net income. So we see that with biotechs, new companies in the tech industry, what have you. But, you know, we can argue all day. The point remains that the SEC expects net income to be the measure.
Yeah, okay.
So how do you articulate that? That's a little tricky. But at the end of the day, that means two things. One is that those companies, they have to do the walk from revenue down to net income and disaggregate whatever expense the CODM is provided with, which could be GAAP expenses, but which could be non-GAAP expenses for one. And also that means that if a company wants to present any other profitability measure in between revenue and net income, those profitability measures become optional. And if they are prepared on a non-GAAP basis, then they trigger some compliance with Reg G, and now you start getting into the rabbit hole of including non-GAAP into your GAAP financials, and that becomes very complex. So we've been actually advising our clients to try not to do that, or really think twice about the risks and the benefits of doing that.
Sounds like the key takeaway was clearly in scope of 280,
absolutely,
more disclosures, including disclosures of the significant expenses that we just talked about.
Yeah.
So on that, because I got to go back to expenses, because I feel like that's like the big consternation about this whole thing. What if you have a single segment entity that says, all we do is provide, you know, consolidated totals to our CODM? So it's basically the same as a consolidated statement of income. Like, what would you say to those companies? Have we seen that?
Yeah, we've heard the argument that, yeah, maybe the CODM doesn't review anything else than what's already on the face, GAAP information, which it could be the answer. In that case, we don't think you need to replicate that gap information. Okay. That's already on the face, in the note. That's the application, not necessary.
You would just disclose it.
Absolutely. But I would say don't default to that just too quickly. Really, really go through the steps of understanding like what is provided to the CODM. Even if you're one segment, I mean, it still could be true that the CODM manages on a non-GAAP basis or using other types of metrics that are not the GAAP ones.
This is honestly where I think we're going to see most of the friction for single reportable segment entities. If I had to guess, and the reason why is because, all right, so you have consolidated net income, fine. I think most single reportable segment entities, they understand that they're going to have to comply with it, right?
Yep.
The significant segment expenses, I think we're going to see some companies naturally default to the consolidated income statement. But you just go back to everything we've talked about, right? This is about disaggregating your expenses. And so if the CODM is receiving information that looks different from your income statement, you have to consider that. Or if information is easily computable from the information that's received, you have to consider that. What we've been encouraging single reportable segment entities is to evaluate those expenses, disclose them incrementally in the segment note to stay in compliance with Topic 280.
And going back to the comment letter or love letter, I guess, if we're going to go that way, seems like the SEC would have two pretty easy questions to ask if there's a single reportable segment doing what you just described. One, are you sure you just have one reportable segment? Two, are you sure the CODM doesn't get anything other than the consolidated income statement? Right? So be prepared to answer that question, I guess, is the takeaway.
Absolutely. Good recommendation.
And just to be clear, you know, in the area of segment reporting, the SEC just don't take the answers for granted.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
They want to see the documentation. They want the companies to prove it to them. But this is really what's going on.
Yeah, imagine if you get that question, it's going to take a long time to answer it and fully resolve it, right? Like be prepared for a lengthy comment letter process, I guess, if that is the question that you receive.
Totally.
All right, Danny, let's come back to you. And Valerie alluded to a lot of this. And you talked about improving health and wellness earlier, right? Going through a reset, cleanse, but usually that resolution also involves, you know, dieting, eating healthier, going forward, watching what you eat, whatever. How would that work into segment reporting?
I think eating right and non-GAAP are the two biggest things that a lot of people end up struggling with. Like if you go back to the SEC comment letters, what's the number one topic of comment letter? It's non-GAAP.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So just like overindulging in sweets can lead to regret, going overboard with non-GAAP in your segment footnotes can lead to trouble, especially with the SEC. So I would say get lean on non-GAAP because it can be hard to digest. Use it in moderation.
All right. So just clarify what you mean a little bit here by non-GAAP. We've talked a little bit about it throughout the podcast, but just to hit the nail on the head, what type of information beyond the non-GAAP expenses, I think that's relatively straightforward, would be considered non-GAAP information, given that we're talking about the financial statements, you know? So like what could be considered non-GAAP in the segment footnote?
I think to answer that question, it's probably important to level set the audience first and remind the listeners that there is a prohibition by the SEC to include non-GAAP in your financial statement. Like that principle hasn't changed. It's still there. The old requirement to disclose the required measure that's closest to GAAP, that's still in place. However, the FASB now permits companies, and as Valerie alluded to disclose additional measures. These can indeed be non-GAAP.
Just to explain maybe a little bit differently the non-GAAP issue, because it's always very confusing.
It is confusing, yeah.
So, you know, a profitability measure that is prepared with accounting principles that are non-GAAP principles will be, if it's placed in the financial statements, it will be considered GAAP if it's required, explicitly required by GAAP. But if it's not explicitly required by GAAP, then it is a non-GAAP measure. That's where when you take Topic 280, there's always been a requirement to present a measure, a segment measure of profit or loss, and that measure can be prepared under non-GAAP principles, so like an EBITDA, let's say. But it, because it's required by 280, that is not a non-GAAP measure per the SEC regulations. Whereas if you start adding voluntary measures that are not prepared on a GAAP principle, then those are subject to the SEC regulations. So it's confusing, honestly.
All right, so let me take a crack at this. I'll try to give an example. Let's say you have a company who has always used two measures of segment profit or loss. One is EBITDA and the other is adjusted EBITDA. So maybe they back out additional items like share-based compensation or something. Historically speaking, they would have disclosed EBITDA in their segment footnote as their measure of segment profit or loss, because that's the one that's closest to GAAP. And because it was required, it was a GAAP measure. So it wouldn't have triggered all the extra non-GAAP disclosure requirements that we love from the SEC. Now with the new ASU, that same company can include adjusted EBITDA and EBITDA in their segment footnote. So there's now two measures of segment profit or loss. But once they add that second one, it will be considered non-GAAP and trigger Reg G, Item 10E, all the SEC non-GAAP disclosures. Do I have that right?
That's right on point, actually.
So where does that information go?
It's location agnostic, sort of say. The SEC provides you an option to either include that SEC non-GAAP compliance exercise either in your segment footnote or in other areas of the financial statements, such as MD&A, for example.
Okay. And do we think most are going to put it in MD&A, I would assume?
I would bet and okay. say yes to that question. I think once the disclosures come out, we're just going to have to wait and see.
Let's say a company has historically disclosed a non-GAAP measure by segment in MD&A. Would you expect that to automatically be in the segment footnote or not necessarily?
Well, I think it does depend if there's another, like not every non-GAAP measure will make its way into the financial statements. If there is a GAAP profitability measure, that will take the priority. So, you know, let's say, for instance, that the CODM is getting operating income by segment yep. and EBITDA by segment. So it is possible that EBITDA by segment is commented on in MD&A, yet really the required measure for purpose of the financial statements remains operating income. So the company doesn't have to present in the financial statements that EBITDA by segment.
It's still optional.
There's not necessarily... you know, a complete matching between between both. But certainly I would say MD&A and investors relations, et cetera, like any information that's in those documentation, that's part of a mix of information that is assessed to determine what is the CODM provided with. So you're back to square one.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about here. Well, hopefully, you know, people are able to maintain these New Year's resolutions, you know, longer than the typical one. I guess I was reading the other day that January 10th is National Quitters Day. That the second Friday of January is when most people give up on their New Year's resolution. Companies don't have that luxury. They got to take it, you know, from here on out. So thank you both for joining. You know, like we said, as we start to see disclosures and comment letters over the next 6 to 12 months, I'm sure we'll be putting out, you know, our thoughtware around those, and maybe we'll do another podcast. We'll have you guys back. So, you know, stay tuned for that. Danny and Valerie, great to see you guys. Thanks as always for joining.
Thanks for having us. This was great.
Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, please give us 5 stars and make sure you subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you listen to podcasts. We've got some really great content coming up that you will not want to miss. And in the meantime, you can check out our website at frv.kpmg.us. We've got some really great materials on whatever financial reporting topic you're interested in. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.